Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin. With me is Stephanie Sylvan. Did I say that right?
Yes, that's right.
And she came in third place in our open contest. If you're listening on iTunes, bounce over to venusindex.com and check out Stephanie's picks. Your pictures were fantastic, and like you and I were talking about, that you were pretty impressed with them, and so was I when I saw them. And I mean, you look great. So let's just get right into it. I think you have your idea of where you want to go with things. So I'm going to kind of let you lead me on this one. So wherever you want to start, I think you wanted to start pretty standard, basically where you were before you found Venus and how you found us.
Yes, all right. Let me say thank you for interviewing me. I've been waiting for that for a long time. Actually, that was one of my strongest motivations for getting into the contest at all, because I really like to talk and to share information. I hope we can keep this within the normal range
of the time frame.
Yeah, right. So I'm trying to be brief. What I've done before VI is pretty much the same story. I've never really paid attention to my weight and to my looks, and then I got pregnant, and the pregnancy itself was not the problem. I got really big after my pregnancy. That was 6 years ago. And when I hit that certain spot where I couldn't really stand myself in the mirror, I started doing everything like David Kirsch DVDs, and I bought a Wii, and I started running and counting calories, everything. It worked up to a certain point, but I kept getting stuck. And so I was listening to podcasts. Can I mention the podcast that inspired me most? Because I think they are still helpful.
Sure.
Like, for example, the Cut the Fat podcast by Ray Heinisch and Blythe Ahlberg. She's a fitness competitor or even bodybuilding section. I'm not sure about that. And there's this one that's called No Willpower Required. That's more the psychological part. Mm-hmm. And then from the Quick and Dirty Tips guys, they're doing a little bit of advertisement, but the Nutrition Diva and the Get Fit guy, Monica Reinagle and Ben Greenfield, they have these 5-minute podcasts. And, well, but all of those podcasts, it got a bit boring, getting the same information. I gravitated to a program. I wanted to have a little more a little more guidance and
structure.
Yeah, that's right. Because I was pretty much counting my calories, looking stuff up over the internet, getting tips from random internet forums, and I didn't really know what I was doing. So then I came to this program called the Metabolic Effect, or the New ME Diet by Jade and Keone Tita. Mm-hmm. And little thanks out to those guys, because I think they were really helpful. I don't agree 100% with everything they say, but it was really helpful because they take care of the hormone and psychological stuff. Mm-hmm. And but they got me into contact with more or less serious workout. And I've never picked up a weight before that. So that was maybe 6 months before I found VI.
So the first time you picked up a weight, how old were you?
Yeah, that was 1 year ago.
which makes you how old?
35.
35 the first time 35. You lift weights. Okay.
Yeah. Before that, I had all of those prejudices. Women usually grow up with, like, if you lift weights, then you bulk up and you turn into this she-male kind of bodybuilder with no breasts. And I've believed all of that stuff, and so I always thought, no, that's for men. I wouldn't do that. But their program, it was not with really heavy weights. It was just a dumbbell. It's their program is a little like your circuits, like the VI circuits, with back-to-back exercises, just 20 minutes. You have a time frame, and then you go through those circuits, 4 exercises back-to-back-to-back, and you push and push and push, and you only rest until you can pick it up again. And then after those 20 minutes, you are pretty much done in every sense of that word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that was really intense, and it was helpful, but I still had problems with dieting, because they don't count calories. It's all this fiber and protein, and skip the carbs, and it was helpful, but still I cheated very much on fats, because carbs are not my main problems. It's fats in the form of avocados and nuts, and I can empty a huge bag of nuts in 3 seconds. You wouldn't believe that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And that's pretty revealing, right? Like, all of these diets that just cut carbs, clearly they don't help for someone whose carbs isn't their problem. Like, it's sort of – it kind of – that exposes right away that these people – there needs to be more thought for you know. I think the low-carb thing is just easy because – 9 times out of 10, that is the problem for the person. But if you're the 10th person who carbs isn't a problem, they have no answer for you.
Yeah, I am. Because I do like sweets and everything, but it's never been that I consumed large amounts of it. I'm as you know, I'm quite the green person, you know, with organic. And I raise my own chicken and have my own omega-3 eggs, and I'm a bit obsessive about that. Long before I started to lose weight or anything, I've always been like that, like all green and all fruits. And so pretty much like Naomi, I really believed that I was eating healthy. Mm-hmm. And so when I read this program with have your protein and have your vegetables, I said, yes, that's the way for me to go. But for some mysterious reason, I ate nuts and peanut butter, and I didn't lose weight. How weird is that? And yeah, as a biologist, of course, I am somehow familiar with the laws of thermogenetics, but thermodynamics. Sorry, but for some reason, that didn't make it to my dieting brain. All of that information. I've been weighing animals. And I know that what comes in has to come out. And I know these things from a logical standpoint. But then again, when I fill my plate, these information don't seem to make it to my everyday decision brain.
Yeah. It happens to all of us. It doesn't, there's an emotional something or other. There's a thing that just allows us to avoid thinking about it as it applies to ourselves.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's almost embarrassing talking about that, because, you know, if somebody hears that, who's going to pay me for my job, for doing something biological, and explain to them why their dog is gaining weight or so, they wouldn't hire me, because this is downright stupid not to really believe in calories or so. It's nothing you believe in, it's just fact. And
yeah, your belief doesn't change things.
Yeah, that's the point. And to a degree, I was counting calories also, but I didn't know about the overestimating stuff, and I was rather lax with it. I cheated myself into, you know, these situations where you have already counted your calories for the day, and then you walk past the fridge, or you're preparing food for your dogs, and then you see those bags of nuts, or you grab a cookie, or you don't really count these because you've already closed the book for the day and you're preparing to go to bed or so. And I'm really good at cheating myself, and believing I would benefit somehow from cheating myself.
I think we all do it at some point. We just, it's getting over that is, I think, the key.
Yeah, it's facing the truth. And I believe all of these other things I went through, like counting my calories and running and all of these things, they prepared me for Venus Index. I believe if I, when if we Venus Index, the really rational way of looking at things, would have hit me the second I decided to lose weight, I don't think I would have accepted that. Because even with all that education I had gathered to that point, when I heard the first podcast, I was still kind of, I don't know how to describe, I was almost pissed off at you guys, because it made sense in a painful way. Because that second you realize, damn, that really makes sense, and you've been doing it wrong all the time. I've been into those forums where they told me never, ever, ever to go below 1,200 calories because your metabolism slows down and yada, yada, yada. And I wanted to believe that because the painful truth was that I was, even as educated as I believe I am, I was falling for all of those traps, and it was all wrong what I did before, and that was a painful truth, really.
Yeah, you're not the first person who said that about once they've listened to some of our stuff. We've had a few people say that they were kind of upset when they heard it, and I don't know, just didn't really want to either accept it or, and like you said, you've got to be ready to hear it, otherwise it'll just go in one ear and out the other. It's like not everyone's actually ready to hear what we have to say. Like I have people return AGD because they just refuse to believe that that's possible.
Yeah, at least I'm a very curious person, and that's what made me stick around, because I didn't have the impression that you guys were one of those people who just want to sell their stuff, because I like podcasts that really go very deep into detail and ramble on and on and on. And this is why I stuck with this podcast, because it got me thinking. It pissed me off and I didn't agree with many of those things, but the more I listened, the more I thought, oh, well, maybe give it a try.
How long were you sort of listening or involved before you decided to – so you found the podcast and were listening to us before you ever committed to us?
Yeah, I was looking for a new podcast. I've been trying Fitcast and I didn't like it for some reason. And then I start new podcasts, and when the people annoy me, then I switch to another podcast. I always need to hear something to stay on track, to keep me rolling with the diet focus. Then I was looking at this picture and Venus Index new podcast, and that was it. And then I listened to the first one. I got, as I told you, I was pretty much put off by the fact that it was so painfully making sense. Then I didn't look at it for maybe another couple of weeks. Then I listened to the same episode again. It was the sabotage point, by the way. Mm. Because I was currently at my sabotage point, and with those metabolic effect guys, where I was eating nuts and wondering why I wasn't losing weight. So I had been on a weight plateau for about a year at that time, and that's a pretty nasty time to believe that you are supposed to lose weight, but you don't. And so I was starting to listen to those podcasts. I listened to all of them in the gym again and again about the loose skin and everything. And what still annoyed me a bit was the part about the contest, because I thought, well, I'm never going to start a contest. You know, that's for those bodybuilding chicks. I will have none of that. And stop talking about that stupid contest.
And now look at you.
Yeah, well, something must have changed along the way. Yeah, then I started to get curious, because, of course, you keep talking about this workout and everything, and I thought, yeah, maybe that makes sense. And then I looked at the pictures, and that's really what blew me away. I think it was Naomi's picture or so. No, it was Alicia. And I saw the winners of the contest, and I was browsing over those pictures, and I thought, 12 weeks, this is impossible. And I looked at myself and thought, well, if they can do it, you can do it too. And I'm never going to enter a contest, by the way, but I'm going to get the program and get started. And yeah, that's what I did. And I think from the first podcast to when I actually bought into the program and got into the forums, it was maybe 4 months or, yeah, about that time. I needed some time to get it into my brain.
Like, you really waited around before you finally committed to us.
Yes, yes.
And you're skeptical and you don't want to do the contest, so what makes you even bother taking pictures and submitting?
Yeah, I've started the workouts, and I'm usually slow with things. With people, it takes me usually years to get really acquainted with someone, and it's totally different in the Venus community, because I've been to really many internet forums and they've all been really different. And usually I try to shut off myself, and then I got into the community and I asked my skeptical questions, and I even after 1 or 2 weeks I felt comfortable enough to post pictures. And then I heard how everybody is talking, and I even started a blog, and that was all long before I decided to get into that contest. And then something not really nice happened. I got falsely diagnosed with arthritis, because I could barely move my hands at that point, and I was really getting sick, and I was reading about it, and so somebody suggested, all of medications wouldn't work in your case, because my case was progressing really quickly and I was expecting to end up in a wheelchair within maybe 10 years or so. And that freaked me out majorly, and I was willing to do everything. And it just so happened, it was all in the same week that I got diagnosed, that I heard about the this fasting program. It was from a German doctor, and it pretty much consisted of 7 days water fasting with some vegetable juice and really, really, really low calories, like 50 calories a day. And for some reason, all of those dates, they fell into place, and then the idea of that contest popped into my mind again and again. And I decided very spontaneously to change my life for the better, to get healthy, to get fit, to get into shape, and to do it all in one big movement. And this is also why I called my blog Walking the Flames, because I was thinking at that point I was fighting inflammation, and I was going to do it with healthy food and get into the exercise. I had started doing the exercises for 2 weeks, and I loved them. And so I decided I would just get the pictures in to keep myself accountable, to have something to move forward to, and just to get focused and forget about disease and decay and fear. And it worked pretty much, because that was, well, just sending those pictures in and making a decision to start that road with all my heart and with everything. That became a life-changing moment for me.
Now, were you committed to submitting your after pictures the whole way? Or were you like, well, I'll submit the befores, but I'm not really sure if I'm going to follow through? Because I don't actually know what the mindset is, because we have like three times as many people who submit a before picture as who actually submit, who also follow through and submit the after. So a lot of people fall off along the way, and I don't really know what they think. Like, I'm amazed that many people even bother with a before if they're not going to follow through. So were you committed the whole way, or were you kind of like testing to see how far you'd make it?
Yeah, let's say I planned to do so, no matter what the outcome. But to be honest, I think if I had fallen off the bandwagon, and like so many have posted in the community, that who have entered the before pictures and didn't enter the contest in the end and didn't send their after pictures. It was the same reason that if I hadn't lost the weight, if I hadn't hit my VI even nearly, if all of the other girls had done so much better than me, then I would have probably bailed out. But generally, I had the plan to submit them anyway. If there had been any progress whatsoever, I would have probably submitted them. Or I told that to myself to keep myself accountable and not to leave the road. Like, you have this set date, and on that date, you will take your pictures. And submitting them was, in my brain, was something to keep myself reliable.
We started recording, but what did you think when you saw your after pictures?
Yeah, that was a bit weird. I took two photo sessions. One of them was shot by my daughter, who didn't really have an opinion. And the other was shot by my husband, who did have an opinion, who never really saw me like that in the open sunlight, almost naked with heels and posing and everything. And I had only seen myself from the waist upwards because I don't have mirrors that large. And when I actually saw the whole picture of it, I was really blown away. Because I still, to this day, have problems accepting that this is really me. Because I've been skinny before in my life, just a short period of time, and I've been overweight for not so much time, but I've never been really overweight or really off of the scale. But I've always lived with that thought, well, you look okay, but never really had that feeling of, wow, this is me. I still have my problems accepting that. Sometimes it's just I wake up and I catch my image in the mirror and I have to stop and walk back and believe it's real.
Now, can you even guess at where that sort of, like, I don't know what the word is, the doubt? Why do you, is it an imposter feeling? Is it because you've never been that excited about the way your body, like, talk about the measurements and how you spoke before, I think before recording, about the measurements and how they kind of, when you hit them, that really, like, you think that was like bang on for you. So kind of, can you just talk about how you got there and like where this feeling you think even comes from, that how can it be that you can't accept that that's you, or at least it's so difficult to?
I personally believe I get to those numbers later.
Okay.
I keep that in the back of my mind because that's also an important point. But I want to get back at that imposter feeling because I think many of us are going through that right now. And I believe for myself, I've grown up as a bit of a chubby teenager, and I've always been picked last at sports events, and I hated sports, and I was always picked at for being lazy and everything. And I think it was part of my coping strategy at that time to identify with that lazy and chubby me. To say, yeah, to really build up your personality around that. Like, I'm not a sports person. I'm not a this and that person. I'm more the slow type, and I'm okay with that. And I think it's something you say to yourself to calm yourself. And then when you get to the point where you realize, oops, I could have changed all the time. I had the power to change, but I didn't. Then I think I have to get over that that regret of not having it done before. And you know, I've found a point in my life where I've told myself that I'm okay like I was, like really lazy. I've been into no sports whatsoever for most of my life. And I've always been a little bit overweight. Not really that people notice it, but that's been that thing that I told myself I'm okay with.
So you just kind of accepted that you were going to have a body that, you know, is kind of average and not going to be winning you any contests.
Yeah, right. That's where you get comfortable at. And because if you tell yourself every day you should do something and you should change and you don't do it, then you get depressed. And if you get to that point where you say, oh, actually, I'm quite okay with it because I am what I am. I am lazy, and I am the person who wouldn't pick up a sport and who would not go in school to sports class, or so would skip the sports class and get low grades and everything. If you identify with all of that, then I think a part of your brain maybe clings to this comfortable point. I think.
Okay.
For me, that plays a role, that it's been a coping strategy in the past to accept what I am and to accept the fact that I can't change anything about that. I think Ellie Scott, she talked about that point also, that she got comfortable at the point where she didn't believe that she could change at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you don't think you can have sort of the VI sexy body, you can at least be an athlete. And in her case, it was the reverse. She figured her bulky body was, well, at least it's an athlete body, but it wasn't a sexy body.
Yeah, right. You identify with whatever you have, whether it's being overweight or being an athlete and having those big legs she keeps talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it really matters where you are or what you identify with, but every time you change that, you have to face the fact that in the past you might have been wrong about your own identity and personality maybe, and you start to question things you've never questioned before. I never expected that just something as simple as losing weight would have such a large impact on pretty much everything, on my marriage, on my social surroundings, or even on the way I do my work.
And oh, yeah, because you go through an identity crisis.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It has a huge impact, especially if you cross the border from being just a normal BMI range to this Venus stage. Because that may be a good point to mention the numbers, because I've been skeptical about those numbers. I usually don't believe so much in metrics that you can take a measurement and say this is attractive or not. I usually believe in, you know, we're all little snowflakes and everyone is beautiful and everything. And it's true. But for myself, those metrics, the moment I hit those numbers, it absolutely hit home for me. And it was like a couple of inches above that, or 1 inch above that. I've looked into the mirror and I thought, well, you look okay. You look pretty good. You look a lot better than last year or so. But I still hadn't this wow factor. I was still looking at celebrities, or even at Venus Index celebrities like Naomi and Alicia's pictures, and I always thought, wow, one day you want to look like that. And but I never really thought I was this close. And then when I got to VI, I hit all of those the hip and the waist measurements. I hit in the same week. It was 1 week out of the contest, and I didn't do a lot of measurements because I didn't even think I would get this close. And the day I hit them was also almost the same day when I looked into the mirror, when I came out of the shower and I said, wow, what's that? because I didn't expect it to be this accurate. 1 inch above that, I was still thinking, yeah, you look quite good, but you still have some to go. And now after the contest, I've even lost some more weight, not a lot, but I've lost half an inch of my waist, and I actually got this feeling of, well, that's a little too skinny. And it's really when I'm at the VI waist when I feel, yeah, almost perfection. It sounds so weird to say that, but the point where I'm really not only okay, but I'm happy with how I look.
You said something earlier even about the whatever amount of fat you're carrying at VI, you actually appreciate that too. Like, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, you said it earlier before we started recording.
Yeah, this is really weird, because I've always thought, I've always looked at fat to be something to get rid of. And there are some other women I've looked at who are still, who still have some fat levels left, because I don't really like the completely ripped look. But on my own body, I've always been a little bit uncomfortable with fat. Like, you know, if you make a movement and you see the fat on your legs wiggling just a little bit, I don't know how to really.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
But if you make a certain movement, like you're bowing forward and you see your belly going in those little rings, and even if they are little, they still bothered me to some point. And during the contest, when I was still in uncharted territory and I was getting to weights I've never been before, still I had the feeling everybody was telling me, no, you're fine, you look so perfect. And I was like, yeah, but there's still a little more to go. And I was getting worried because I never thought there would be an end to it. I was afraid that I might always think that that I might push myself to get to 9% body fat, because every little bit of fat would annoy me. Because it did annoy me when there was a couple of pounds still sitting on my frame. And because everybody keeps telling you, my God, you look so thin and you shouldn't lose more weight, then you start thinking, maybe I'm sliding into something unhealthy here. But when I hit VI, I actually got that point where I thought, wow, everything about you right now, even the fat that is still left, because I'm not ripped and I don't want to be, even that is attractive. And this is a point where I've really never been before in my life. There's always, even when I was skinny, then the fat that was left on my frame would bother me. This is really a point where I can now, excuse the kinky frame, but when I wiggle my butt in front of the mirror, I don't feel put off because, ooh, that's fat. Because I think, wow, that's some booty there.
Well, yeah, it's where you want it to be.
Yeah, that's exactly where I want it to be. And this is also why I'm not sad or so that I can't enter the next contest. I will stay in the community, and I always have my plans and everything, but I really am happy with who I am now, how I look now. And if somebody tells me he's looked into his crystal ball and girl, you are never going to lose a single ounce of fat in your life from now on, then I'd be happy, because yeah, that might sound very simple. But it's for me, it's a profound experience that there actually is the point where I am happy, and instead of wanting more and more and more muscle or less and less and less fat, there is actually the point of balance where I look in the mirror and say, yeah, you don't have to change anything right now. You're good.
So now you're in the next phase of maintenance, to just stay here.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole different struggle, so to speak. Because now that I am where I'm happy, and I keep hitting my ideal weight and I keep hitting the waist, and sometimes I'm a little up, but I've been below that. And so I'm in the process of finding my comfortable ranges.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also trying to wean myself off of the counting calories. And yeah, that there are struggles with the maintenance, because now that I have seen what I can look like, I'm really scared at losing it. It's maybe like winning the lottery or so, and then you become really paranoid about somebody stealing all of your precious items or so. It's like my precious.
So you have the ring and you don't want to give it away.
Yeah, it's really kind of when I've seen that movie those days after the contest, and it really reminded me of me being so scared to lose it again, because even this kind of feeling it's uncomfortable at times, because you wake up and you still have that look. But I think maintenance is a whole new learning experience, and it might take me as long as the whole contest to get comfortable with it.
Yeah, I think there's a learning curve there, and I think it's once you slowly, as the imposter feeling goes away, and you start identifying yourself as a Venus, I guess, you know, we'll use that word, and you're like, oh, well, no, you know, as the months go by and it starts turning into years, if you're maintaining this look, you're going to eventually look in the mirror, and if you stray 5 or 6 pounds one way or the other, that won't be who you are. You'll, in your head, I think the goal is to get to the point where you're like, no, this isn't me, I'm the Venus. And then it makes it a bit easier, I think, at least psychologically, to reel it back in. And now you know how. So if certain life circumstances cause you to stray out, like you said, your comfortable range, and it is a range, it's not a point. Like, your waist will go up and down in a day, your weight will go up and down in a day, all of it goes up and down in a day, but it's how far up and down can you let it go until you're like, okay, I don't like that anymore, and then you reel it back in. And once you start flipping that psychological switch barrier in your head that now your new identity is VI, then it becomes easier to pull it back, because all you're doing is coming back to who you think you are.
That's a good point, actually. That's a nice way to look at it. I will add that to my maintenance wisdom. I've gathered a couple of resources about maintenance, and I'm still in the process of trying to look at it in a positive way. This fear of losing what I have right now, and I think if I look at it as identifying with my new self and then pulling myself back to it, because that's where I belong, that's quite a good way to look at it.
Well, I mean, it's the same issue you had to overcome to get here in the first place. You're identifying yourself as the non-athletic, chubby, lazy kid, and you don't do anything about it because that's your identity. The crisis is going all the way to VI and now learning to identify yourself as VI, such that you force yourself to stay at VI. Cassandra Bragg, I did an interview with her, and she said something really profound. She said her whole life she's viewed herself as thin. And so even though she put on 50 or 60 and 80 pounds during her pregnancies, she, as soon as she saw herself that at that weight, she's like, no, this has to go. I'm a thin person. So in her head, her identity was never big. It was always thin. And so she just did what it took to be thin again. And so it never, you see what I mean? Like, she didn't allow herself to be like, oh, I'm a big person. She all the time thought her self-identity was, I'm thin. So she just put whatever it took to become thin again. So, you know, she dieted, she exercised, whatever it was, she just got herself back to what her internal mind was like, no, you're a thin person, so just get on your horse and be thin again. So now it's for you and for all the girls, it's you're a VI and just get back to being VI. So if you push the edge of your range a bit too much, it's I'm not saying it's simple, but that's the trick. The trick is really believing that's who you are.
Yeah, that's really a nice way of seeing it. I'm going to work on that, because the Sabotage Point podcast was what dragged me to VI first, because this is a big issue for me. Not only because of your social surroundings, I'll talk about that maybe later, but also in your head. And that's pretty much what you said. I always believed I was the lazy and chubby kid that doesn't do anything at sports. And yeah, that's as uncomfortable as this identity is, and as unattractive as it sounds to be that person, it let's say it with a line from a chorus line, it wasn't paradise, but it was home.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. And now it's, I guess you could say paradise is home?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's, okay. Yeah, there's nothing, you have nothing to follow that with. Okay, so, yeah, I guess that's, it's kind of that fear of success or something like that, like the fact that now a spotlight's been turned back on you. Brad Howard and I just did the Venus Effect podcast. We recorded it. It's not up yet, but it'll go up at some point. And it's the idea that people can go from, you know, a body that gets attention but for the wrong reasons. Like you're out of shape, maybe not you particularly, but a person can have a body that gets them attention for the wrong reason, for being, you know, visibly obese in a way that people kind of look at you and maybe probably make a mental judgment. Then you can start losing weight or start getting in better shape such that you blend into the crowd and you get no attention, which is very comfortable, not paradise but home. No one really looks at you one way or the other. And then if you take it all the way to VI, now all of a sudden you get attention again, but it's because you're in better shape than everyone else. And I think one of the parts of that is accepting that and being that new sort of, you've managed to set yourself apart from the crowd again. Now all of a sudden you get attention again. And maybe some people aren't ready for that. Maybe some people like to be just blissfully anonymous in the crowd and just, you know, leave me alone. It's, I don't have any pressure when I'm average.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And that's also what I really liked about your approach, because your podcasts are in depth and the community goes even deeper and is full of people who are not only curious but also highly educated, like rocket scientists. And most of us, I found out, have either a scientific background or medical background, or are some in some way involved into research and are very curious and dedicated people. And I think there's more to all of this than just find a clever workout and reduce your calories, because there are a gazillion ways to reduce calories and it's different for everyone. And I think it's really important to get into these mental issues, because once you get your mental set up right, then everything else just follows. Then you only need the knowledge how to do it. But if you are not mentally ready, or let's say I wasn't prepared for many of the difficulties I would face, be it physical or psychologically or mentally, emotionally. There have been many things on my road I really haven't been prepared for. And I think that's where also the community comes into place, because they can actually prepare you for that. And this is also why I like to talk about my current maintenance stuff, because I've started to blog about what I call project maintenance, because I've dedicated myself to share my experiences from transitioning from the dieting mentality into the maintenance mentality, because it is a huge shift. And there are amazing things to be learned still when you think you are done, in quote unquote done, because you've reached VI and because you've reached the point where you say, okay, I want to look exactly like that, and there's nothing more to change. I only want to keep what I have.
That's just the start of the rest of your life.
Yeah, and that's more difficult than I expected. It's yeah, for the contest, I've been able to put many things aside. Like I've sent an email to the people who sent me my study material. So guys, don't expect anything smart from me for the following 3 months. And my horses are on the pasture, so I don't have to take care of them a lot. And I've put many things aside because I expected those 12 weeks to be intense, and they were. But somehow a part of me also believed that if I'm there, then I'm there. But it's a whole new learning experience, and yeah, there are still things to prepare for. Like I've stepped out of the closet and told my friends what I've been doing, and the reactions were just, yeah, I'm still flabbergasted.
Can you walk us through some of that? I know you posted in the forum about it, but if you can share a little bit right now.
Yeah, I've posted my outcome because I was waiting for the moment would I actually place in the contest, and how well would it come out, and how are the others doing and everything. I didn't tell many people about it, so I flew covert most of the time for most people. My family knew about it, and some chosen people I knew who would be supportive knew about it, but most of the people who I assumed just wouldn't care or would be supportive but didn't really need to know. I didn't tell a lot of people about it. And then when I actually placed in the contest, I was so proud I decided to put it on Facebook. And I really expected many of them to just maybe not care or say, hey, good job, but it's not my thing or anything. But they got downright. I posted an article of yours. There's a picture of you, and then an article about how your goals are your own, and how it's your body, and it's your triumph, it's your failure, and a little bit about responsibility and accountability, and you closed it up with a question. The question is, will you do it? And it's also about dedication and pursuing goals. And I posted this article with saying this is going to be my new mantra because I found it so important to take responsibility for what you're doing, no matter how stupid it is and what you've done in the past. Because only if you accept what you've done before, then you can pick yourself up and dust yourself up and move on. And so I find it important to find goals and everything. And when after I posted that, not only were the people making fun of you, like they've all deleted their comments after that because somehow they must have realized what they did. Then Cassandra Bragg posted something because she's among my Facebook friends, and you know how she is, how she talks with others after everything. And my friends commented on her like she's a shallow person, and they made fun of her, and then they made fun of you and your pictures, and then they attacked me for explaining that it wasn't about being perfect, or the whole world doesn't need to look like John Barbin. I don't want to look like John Barbin either. It's
Yeah, I hope you don't.
not my personal goal either, yet I'm posting this article, which obviously means I didn't post it to tell everybody you should look like him. And but for some reason, some of them really took it personally. Like, you can't tell me I should change, and I really don't know what set them off so badly. One of them has actually apologized for that. That was the one who deleted his comments, and he was a bit embarrassed about his reaction. But the other one is still mad at me. And yeah,
Any explanation?
Yes. She's overweight herself, and she's always been overweight, and she's always teased me about me being the skinny one. And we don't see each other often So there are always a couple of years between when we see each other. And usually, every time we meet, I have lost weight. I have become a little fitter. And she has gained weight and has become a little less fit. She has her times when she picks up swimming, running, or anything, and then stops again. And I think it's really like that I have always been her mirror, telling her what she's not doing. And now I think I've gone too far, you know.
Yeah, and that makes me think of I went to a coaching conference once that was held by it was a teleconference, but it was live. We were just getting a feed from it, and I went with some of the coaches I worked with, and it was a lot of the big time NCAA football coaches. And one of the guest speakers had a line, and I think it sums up why certain people attack us, like yourself, and you know, you put something I say about like it, you know, go out there and will you do it and all that stuff. And the line was, hurt people and are easily hurt. And that means someone who's hurting right now, like emotionally, or they're down on themselves, or they're just feeling some degree of hurt or some pain. Their reaction is to lash out and hurt you right back. But then they themselves are very easily hurt. So if they're already hurting, they're, like I said, it's not a physical hurt, but an emotional hurt. It's very easy for something you say that's completely benign. Like you just put up a post, you know, you reposted something I wrote about basically motivation and dedication and just getting something done, and it hurts them because they're already hurting. And then their kind of simple sort of defending their emotion reaction is to lash back out and hurt you. So that line always sticks in my head now, hurt people and are easily hurt. And it just makes me, it reminds myself that certain things we're going to do and say, if, you know, you got to view some people from an emotional standpoint, like it's just a big open wound and all you did was poke it. And it's, you didn't mean to, none of us mean to. And we can't spend our lives constantly, you know, tiptoeing around all of these people who are sort of walking around semi-damaged, semi-broken, because we're all kind of broken. But if they haven't healed that wound yet, things are going to hurt them, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. They have to go through the process of healing. Otherwise, you know, everything for the rest of their lives will hurt them. So that's when I've really learned to let other people, that's when I really understood that that's their problem. Like that's a them problem, not a me problem. And it, you know, the people who, when I say something like that post, it makes me feel good when it inspires someone like you, because you're going to do something about it. And so to say, will you do it? Your answer, of course, was yes, I'm going to do it. And you did. But then there's those hurt people who can't face it yet. And instead of motivating them or inspiring them, it just hurts them. And I just keep always replay that quote in my head to realize it's, I didn't mean to hurt them. And it's just because right now they're hurt. So at some point they'll heal, but they're just not healed right now. And then, so that to me, that's how to categorize those type of negative reactions.
Yeah, that's from a logical standpoint. I've always given the same advice to people in that situation, but still knowing that it still hurt me, because it has happened in the other direction, because these are not just some dogs I've picked up on the internet last week or so. These have been real life friends. When I lived in Germany, we've lived for 10 years in the same country and seen each other often. And we've shared many a crisis. Let's put it like that. And like, for example, she's always been wanting to have a baby, and then I got accidentally pregnant, and like, whoops, I'm a mom now, and I didn't even try. And we've overcome that point. She's been jealous. She's admitted she's been jealous, and we've got over it. And now I lose some weight, and all of a sudden she drops all of her inhibitions and attacks me like that. It's just, it is really weird how this body image thing seems to be more important than I thought. I thought it was a pretty shallow thing to to look at your body and put so much focus in it. But it seems to be something you can really hurt people with that more than you would expect to.
I think you can hurt them worse with that.
Yeah, that must be something really substantial. Like it hurts more than we've dated the same guy for a while, and not even that has separated us. But losing weight is the one thing I wasn't allowed to do in that friendship, and this is something I had problems getting over. Now I'm in the process of getting over it, and what the hell? It's her problem, not mine. I see that now. But it has taken me some time, even though from a logical standpoint, I totally get that. I know she's hurt, but I didn't realize how deeply and to what extent.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for any one person in particular, but I'd imagine it can be that feeling that the regret of your whole life. Like if you've lived decades as an adult, I mean, obviously, like someone who's 10 or 15, 20 years old, there's still lots of life to go. But if you're up into your late 20s and then into your 30s and you're still unhappy with your body, it can get on to the feeling that you're like, you can start thinking how could life have been? Like, you can start regretting the whole entirety of what you've done so far. Like you said, it's not paradise, but it's home, and you spend a long time not where you think you could have been or where wanted to be, and then someone like you comes along and changes in 12 weeks, and they're like, oh no, is that all it took? So I've spent decades not where I wanted to be, and I was really just 3 months away all along. So
yeah.
It's tough. I mean, like you said, you hold the mirror up. Are you showing somebody that the dissatisfaction they've had with themselves for decades was literally 3 months from changing, and they just couldn't be bothered with the 3 months? Like, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it's even tough for myself, you know, to realize how long I've been struggling with weight loss before and how little it would have taken. Where for sure, if I had started from the beginning, I couldn't have done this in 12 weeks, but I know now where I was lacking and how relatively simple it would have been to take that step. But I really guess I wasn't ready, and I think if people from the outside attack you, then they are not ready too. And sometimes you can inspire them, but you can't force them, and you really have to leave them behind. And it's still painful, even if you know why and you know how and you understand why. And it's still painful because that's a real friend. I don't have many friends, and that's one less. And
it's shocking.
Yeah.
It's surprising that you just do something for yourself and somehow you lose a friend out of it. And you're like, well, what? All I did was get in shape. Like how could that possibly have a negative effect? But it's true. It's your body for some reason means a lot to everybody else.
Yeah, it's really weird. I never expected that. I always thought that was some minor thing. Well, not for oneself, but I never expected that would come at that price. I still think I would have done it, but sometimes I wish I would have realized before that how much of an impact it would have on everything. Not only negative impact, it also has positive impacts in areas where I never would have expected it, like on my professional life. I have the feeling that people take me a lot more seriously when I talk about dog behavior and how not related is that to my weight. You know, you can be a dog behavior consultant if you're 300 pounds heavy, and it wouldn't make a difference because I'm not a dog trainer who needs to run around. But for some reason, if people look at me now, they seem to be a lot more willing to listen.
Mm. There's research on this. It's part of the halo effect, and it's part of the people are going to for better or for worse, regardless if it's fair, people judge you based on your body, and if you're out of shape or overweight or just, you know, you don't look like you do much with your body, that they're going to make the psychological, they're going to make the assumption in their head, whether or not it's even conscious, that, well, if you can't take care of your body, you probably can't take care of your business, and you can't take care of whatever business I'm trying to bring you. It's not at all true, but that whether or not you're good at your job is irrelevant if you just tend to eat a little bit too much food. But the visual, you can't stop people from – people can't even stop themselves from making that assumption in their head. So it just sort of happens subconsciously. So the – I guess the other way around saying it is if we know that that's human nature, why not leverage it to your advantage? It's not fair, but it's what is.
Yeah, sure.
Like you said, you're already noticing it.
Yeah, that's weird because I've been trying to motivate people to listen to stuff for a long time, and so the difference is noticeable. Of course, I can't really tell whether this is the only factor, but I have the impression that especially if I talk to people who haven't known me before, who don't know that I've just lost this weight, who maybe think I've been a fit and a slim person for all my life and active and full of energy and this. A Facebook friend of mine who I just picked up recently, they are sending those jokes around like this post and then I tell you something about yourself. So, and I played along, I liked the post and she said she admired my endless energy. And I was like, what? Because that was absolutely not me 1 year ago. I was rather known as the one who looks at life with this lethargic and rather slow-paced. I don't know how to say that. But
I understand.
I'm really not somebody who would identify with endless energy and these things because she sees me walking or running past her house every day. It's a neighbor of ours. And she knows that I go to the gym because she sees me leaving in the morning with my gym bag. And so she believes already that I am a Venus and have always been, and this is where I belong. I think she believes it more than I do right now.
You need to take some of that and inject it into yourself.
Yeah. So what I'm doing now is surround myself with people who see me like that, to get a little bit of that reflection.
Yeah, well, and that's part of this, right? I don't think. Like you said, I don't think people anticipate the fact that somewhere along the line, by changing the shape of your body, you actually end up shedding some skin. Like a few friends that you thought were friends might not turn out to be friends. Some new people you didn't know were all of a sudden going to be your friends. It really just sort of affects everything. I think that's actually the harder part about changing the shape of your body, like losing weight, getting in shape. I don't think it's the actual nuts and bolts of doing it. I think it's all of the social, barriers and circles we run in and all the tugging that happens in one direction or another and tension that rises between people. I think that's actually what stops people from either getting in shape or staying in shape. I don't actually think we can all grind our way through a 3 or 4 month program. We can all like hit the gym. We can kind of build those habits. It's the constant dealing with people and dealing with social change and relationships changing. I think that's the part that actually sabotages everybody. It's just no one notices it.
Yeah, and even if it's, I know in my past I've had friends where we would hang out regularly at my place or at my boyfriend's place at that time and order a pizza. And I just, for a while I imagined how far would I have gotten if I had still been in that social environment. Because right now I have my own farm and I live healthy and I have no problem cooking my own stuff and I know how to prepare calorie low foods and everything. I'm in charge of myself. And I wonder how far would I have gotten if I had the same program, like somebody would have given me Venus Index exercises and AGD and Eat Stop Eat manuals. When I was 14 and still lived with my mother, who was an excellent cook and cooked every day for 6 persons while we were only 3, and how far would I have gotten if I had the same programs and knowledge when I was 20 years old and hanging out with my friends, ordering pizza and sitting around smoking cigarettes and this kind of lifestyle where you have soda pops and junk food and TV, and would I have had the guts to step up and say, listen, people, let's stop this. I'm going to have this broccoli now, and I'm going to eat organic, and no, I'm not going to order the pizza. I'm only having a salad or so. What would have been the impact on my social life, and would I have done it anyway? Or these are things I wonder, if you put the same person in a different environment, what would happen? Of course, this is a theory and nobody can tell me, but I bet I wouldn't have gotten far.
Or you did it and you'd have to spend a lot less time with those people.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Those are your two choices, right? I think at that point, it's a choice. It's your body or the social life. And then whoever kind of wants to do it with you, they come along. Or if they don't, they all enjoy that life better. You gotta find new friends. But it doesn't mean like they're the only friends you can ever have. I mean, it's, you kind of have to discover new ones who value the same things that you value.
Yeah, I'm learning from my daughter. She's just started preschool, and she's been very attached to her friends before, you know, like children are, and they are still missing her, and I rarely ever hear her talk about them. It's not like leave them behind and never think about your old friends again. But she is really happy with her new friends, and she's only known them for a week or so. And this is sometimes how I feel in the Venus community, because these are people I've known only over the internet and only for a couple of months. And yet when I got this, severe diagnosis, right in the middle of the contest, it really struck me in 6 weeks or so, I got diagnosed with a brain tumor of unknown dimension, of unknown consequences, and the only thing I knew was at that point, it's a brain tumor, definitely, and it must be an active and a big one, because it's affecting my health in a large portion. It's messing up my hormones largely, and these were the only snippets of information I had. So for a week, for 2 weeks, I lived with the thought that I might die soon. And funnily enough, the first group of person I turned to and I told about it and I started to talk about it were the Venus Index community. And I only thought about that later, how weird that was, because most of my friends, I thought, no, they're probably going to cry, or they're going to impose their doomsday thoughts about that, and they're going to pull you down. But I had the feeling I needed to share it with somebody, of course, with my husband, and of course, with my really close family. But amongst friends, nobody knows it even to that day. And within the Venus Index community, I really had the feeling, okay, this is where you're going to get not only support, but also the needed kick in the ass if you start to feel sorry for yourself all the time. And yeah, that's really strange.
That's a big shout out for the community. I guess we're kind of getting on to the end here. What's your final words of advice for everybody?
Oh yeah, I think I've skipped a lot of things I plan to say here, because I've learned so many things during the whole contest, be it exercise wise, and I've done pretty severe things to my nutrition in between, which I have learned many things from. And let me just shortly talk about the fasting and the limbo dieting, because the limbo is something I think Kimberly invented, and it was try to put 10 days of as low as you could possibly go with your calories. And I was really ambitious, like I would keep it for 10 days below 400 calories and then have fasting days in between. And then at around day 7 or so, I felt like I was fighting myself. I was feeling so miserable that I was literally crying at the thought of food. I was thinking of, my God, I felt like I was never going to get food again. And that was when I realized I was really damaging myself with that thought. It's not that I don't recommend fasting or anything. It's not that I'm saying fasting is bad. But sometimes you hit those points in your exercise, in your struggles, where you just push yourself too far. And then on the other hand, you have those endless times where you let yourself go and are not accountable and are lazy and doing nothing. And what I've really learned within this contest is you need to find the balance between stretching yourself when you feel good. If you have the energy and you feel nice about yourself, you look in the mirror and say yes, and you feel motivated, and then use this energy to push yourself, to challenge yourself again. Don't do the same thing you did yesterday. Do something more. But then again, there are points in your life where you feel out of energy, where you feel depressed, where your body hurts, and maybe something like that, like those bad news I got from my doctor. And then I was so sad and so depressive, and I tried to fast anyway. But that was a really bad idea, and I realized that when I feel really sad, then fasting and pushing is a bad idea. You have to find this point where you swing back. And you have to trust in yourself that if you, I don't know, stop dieting for a couple of days, if you've stretched yourself too far, or if you've let yourself go a bit for a while, you have to trust yourself that the pendulum will swing back, that you will get back into the swing of things. So I guess the most important lesson I learned from the whole program is trust yourself, trust the program, trust the whole process, and find a balance between stretching yourself in good times and taking care of yourself in bad times. Because that's both part of the secret, what keeps you going to the end, until you are there.
That sounds good to me, and that's probably the best advice. Everyone, if you try to push yourself too hard in the bad times, you can sour yourself to the whole process, and then those are the moments when you feel like giving up and think it's too hard.
Yes, exactly. And that's also why it's important. It sounds contradictory to say, well, take a break and take care of yourself, but really you have to balance it out with the challenges when you feel good again. But you really have to give yourself the time to feel good again, and yeah, trust that you will get back on the bandwagon, and just believe you will get back there. I stop.
The down times just don't last.
Yeah, right.
You'll eventually get through them if you allow yourself to get through them.
Yeah, if you have times where you are more hungry than else, then just eat a little more, and just trust that you will have times where you will exercise more and eat less and be more comfortable with living in a deficit, and there will be times when fasting comes naturally and feels easy. And just don't force yourself, challenge yourself, but don't torture or force yourself.
I think that's a good place to leave it off for now. I know you had other things, so maybe we'll do a second podcast if you have more points to cover, but I think that's a good place to leave this one.
Oh, sure.
Okay. All right. So, well, thanks for being on. And so for Stephanie Sylvan, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index podcast.